Blog Talk Radio. Today is Monday, March 28th, and this is Foxology Today. I'm Sober Ray Fox, your host. Happy day greetings to you. I hope you had a wonderful weekend, and I hope you have a wonderful week ahead of you, too. You know, I hope you're getting your ducks in a row, whatever those ducks may be. Hope you're looking forward and setting your goals high, all of that, shooting for the stars. You know, it just, you know, makes you feel pretty good when you have a clear, optimistic vision of your future. It makes you feel happy, you know, excited when you have your sights set on great possibilities, and we all have great possibilities. It takes work, though, but you know what they say, it's worth the work, and I believe that truly. But sometimes we have to overcome particular challenges before we can successfully move on and move forward and move up in our lives. And sometimes the greater that challenge weighs on us, the harder it is, particularly if you've been the unfortunate victim of childhood sexual abuse. So you may be dealing with some deep hurt and scars from that. And that often makes you feel unworthy or even worthless, hard time loving yourself, loving others, allowing others to love you, and particularly about achieving. Well, my guest today is Lolita G. She's the CEO and founder of Lolita's Living Room, and it's an organization whose sole focus is helping girls and women overcome these kinds of issues. And in addition, she's launched a champion effort, Black Woman Heal Day, to unite women together towards helping each other and healing. Welcome, Lolita.
Thank you so much. So glad to be with you today.
Yeah, I'm real glad that you're here too. I'm real concerned about issues like this in particular, and when I see things like this come through my feed, as I did notice you last year, definitely wanted to get you on the air so we could talk about it. How's everything going? I know you launched Black Woman Heal last year, and from all that I can tell, you did that very successfully.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was very exciting last year and scary at the same time, launching something like this. And I've never done anything of this magnitude. But we, in the end, had 40 states and 12 countries that joined us in our efforts for Black Woman Heal Day during our inaugural year.
That is such a grand thing. Congratulations. And I can certainly see I can certainly see why, when you're giving platform to women who, you know, may have been afraid for years to say anything or not sure that there was any true supportive help or understanding or other people to support them, you can see why it would be such a wonderful effort to put in place. And I just commend you for that. What I'd like to do to start off our conversation is, you have a story of your own, unfortunate circumstances dealing with this, and let's go ahead and tell people about how this issue has affected your life and when it all began.
Absolutely. So I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse at the hands of my stepfather. And it started when I was around 6 years old. And it went on for about 5 years. And I think as I grew up, I knew I felt broken and damaged, but I don't think I fully understood that the reason I felt that way was because of their sexual abuse. The unfortunate thing is that for children, particularly who are sexually abused at a very young age, you don't just think this bad thing happened to me. You think I'm bad. And because I'm bad, this thing happened to me. So at a very young age, actually immediately the first time that I can recall being abused, I can remember the sense of shame entering my body, my mind, my spirit, and I carried that for decades. And so it took me a long time to begin to unravel that my basic maladjustment was really the onset of this childhood trauma.
So when you were younger and this was happening to you, I want to ask you a couple of questions about it.
Okay.
When When your stepfather was abusing you, did you, even though you felt shame, and of course it must have been a secretive issue, how did he help you not expose it? What kinds of messages mm-hmm. do men who do this say to children to intimidate them and create fear that something like this can go on for so many years?
That's a great question, and it's really a range. But what I will say initially is that when shame comes into a child from a situation like this, there's not a lot that you need to say because they feel shame and they feel like they did something wrong. So they don't have a lot of motivation to tell because they feel like they'll get in trouble. But the range of things that perpetrators will say is anything from, if you tell, I'll get in trouble and I'll go to jail, which is the type of things that my stepfather used to say to me. It'll kill your mother, break her heart, those type of things, because I loved my stepfather, and he used that love that I had for him against me, all the way up to, if you tell, I will kill you, I will kill your mother. And these are very real things that abusers will say to children, whether or not they actually mean it. You can imagine that an adult person, most of the times, I would say 90% of the times, is going to be someone that this child knows, loves, or trusts. They're going to weigh those words very heavily from each spectrum. And so the adults, it's not very hard for a grown man to manipulate, to intimidate, to make a 7-year-old child. It doesn't take a whole lot of effort, but some really go to the extremes.
Do they also tell you that this is happening because they love you?
Oh, sure. You're special. You know, I love you, and I love you more than this person or that person, or people don't understand our love. And oh, they say a plethora of very sick and cruel things, which end up really distorting love, trust, relationships for us as survivors for years to come. I often say that I really wish that my stepfather had beat the hell out of me instead of using my love for him against me, because it really confused what love meant for me, and it made me believe that pain always accompanied love. And that was, it took me many decades to unravel that lie.
Wow. Can you tell us about some of the insecurities and experiences that occurred as you were growing up?
I'm sorry, I missed the first part of that question.
What are some of the insecurities that you felt as a girl as you were growing up?
Oh, sure. One of the first things that comes to mind is just as I began to develop and mature into a young woman, I felt like my body was betraying me. So I really fought having any sense of sexuality. I didn't want to be attracted in any way physically to anyone. So, I mean, I used to walk just almost as straight as you could. I didn't want my hips to sway. I didn't want my breasts to blossom. You know, I didn't want any of that because I felt like it made me more of a target. And I just felt ugly. I felt unloved. I felt unworthy. I felt that there's something just basically wrong with me as a person. And I also had a lot of depression and anxiety, which, of course, I didn't understand what that was at the time. But it just made me feel broken. It made me feel ashamed. I wouldn't want to.
So when the abuse stopped, you were around 11 or 12. Is that correct? Okay, it looks like I have lost my caller. I just need her to call back in. The same thing happened last week, and oh my goodness. Well, I think I'm going to have her back. And
what happened?
Okay,
I'm back. I don't know what happened.
Well, let's continue talking.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. All of a sudden, I was like, what happened? So I'm still here.
Wow.
So, So I really just felt broken, and I didn't know how to fix myself. And that just led me to just overall just having a very poor sense of self.
Yes, yes. And what age were you when the abuse stopped, and how did it stop? Was it discovered?
No, I was 11 approximately when the abuse ended, and I can just remember just getting to the point where I just felt I was going to die if it didn't end. And it wasn't just the sexual abuse itself. There's something very destructive that happens to someone, anyone, that is locked under dark secrets. Secrets really destroy you from the inside out. And living this double life, I was a little kid, but I had to get up every day and act like life was hunky-dory, go to school like everyone else. And it was the falsehood of it all was just really killing me. And one day before my stepfather was going to try to abuse me, he wanted to take me somewhere. And often when we go on these excursions, if you would, he would abuse me in the car. And I just took a stance that day, and I said I didn't want to go. And he kept trying to convince me to go. And my mother called me in. She says, "What's going on?" And she later said, you know, I asked her, "Well, why did you ask me about it that day?" She said that there was something about the look on my face. And I often say, you know, didn't I have that look on my face for years? You know, because I don't care how much a child tries to cope, undeniably, there are signs that you can see that are going on with them. And I told her that day, and even when I did disclose to her that he was abusing me, I only told the very tip of the iceberg because it was still very difficult to say the words. I was still very, very much full of shame. And so I could just say he's been messing with me, you know, to describe years of horrific abuse. That's all I could come up with, was that he's been messing with me. So I think it's very important for parents to understand that even if a child does disclose, be assured that there's much more that's been going on than they're able to initially say.
Yes. Yes, it's so sad and unfortunate. So as you grew up, and I'm going to be segueing in a minute to your current projects and how you're helping people, I'm just trying right now to have you share enough information so people can see that if they've experienced this or that if they know someone who has, that everybody can understand how deep-seated it is and that there is opportunity to get healthy again in your emotions and in your mind and be able to move on in life. It may be challenging. You said it took decades to really get where you felt you needed to be to understand love and relationships. But just do a kind of a synopsis of those decades. What was going on with you, and when did you finally see the light that you needed to that would help you gain the understanding you needed?
There's probably two major times in my life that I can remember just saying, hey, you need some help. And one was when I was in college. So college time is a very critical phase for those who have been abused, because for those who go away for college, that might be the first time since their childhood that they felt safe and away from the abuser. So it's a great time to engage people around healing. And there was a speaker that had come into one of my women's studies class, and they were talking about abuse and help, and I decided I was going to reach out to get some help. And I started therapy. I wish I had stayed with it, but what ended up happening is when I first started therapy, and I was about 19 at the time, the therapist immediately said, "You're not the problem. We actually need to get your stepfather and your mother in here." And at the time, they were still together. So the fast forward of that story is that my mother stayed with them even after she found out the truth. And so that was a very critical point for me, at least starting my healing journey. The other critical time for me was when I was pregnant and subsequently had a daughter. at that moment, I was just really faced with, will I repeat, because my mother was also a survivor of sexual abuse, will I repeat this family history? What can I do? And I just really, the trauma was really re-triggered, and I was in a very strong crisis mode, and that pushed me into seeking help. I had postpartum depression horribly, and it was really my daughter, and then subsequently when I had my son, that really said, look, you have to do something for yourself. Even if you don't feel worthy to heal, you have to do it, because if you don't, you're creating a scenario that your kids are going to have to go through the same thing. So those are some of the most critical moments, really, as a mom.
Well,
wanting to move forward.
So when that happened, what did you do in your own self-awareness to move on? Of course, are you saying then that just created a motivation for you to start doing what at that time?
I was in crisis mode. I was losing my mind. I was having so much anxiety. I had post-traumatic stress response, and I was so triggered that I couldn't live normally anymore. And I had to pause life. I had to stop being the strong Black woman. I had to stop hiding my pain and just pushing forward, because it wouldn't let me go forward anymore. It said, you're going to deal with me. You need to deal with me right now. And so because I was in that crisis mode, I started seeking mental health support. I started going to a therapist who was specializing in postpartum depression. And then that just kind of parlayed me into getting back into therapy. And a while down the road, I ended up taking medication because I was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress and generalized anxiety disorder. And I felt I needed at the time to have something else to help me, that what I was going through wasn't just me. There was something going on in my brain that I couldn't just will away. So I did therapy. Of course, I prayed. I had the oil. I did everything I could, positive mental thinking, affirmation. I mean, I did everything that I could, because I knew that unless I prioritized my healing, that I was just going to self-destruct.
Yes, yes. Well, thank God that you didn't, and thank God that you had the wherewithal and the motivation to go ahead and create opportunities for other girls and women who you completely understand everything that they're going through in these issues. So let's talk about putting the latest living room in place. When did that happen, and what are you doing?
So it happened informally. One day at church, I shared my testimony about being a survivor, and literally women and teen girls start showing up in my living room who were just in a crisis mode, who never heard anybody publicly talk about it. And because I did, they felt like I could help in some way. Now, at the time, I still felt broken myself. But what I found was, as I began to help, and just sometimes just I was just with someone. Sometimes I just witnessed their story, you know, witnessed their tears, and prayed with them, you know, or just listened or cussed a few times, you know, just the frustration and understanding what they were going through. It became apparent to me down the road that this wasn't just something that happened to me, but that I had a calling on my life to work in this field very specifically with survivors. And I want to be very clear with people, because when people see this book that I do now, I wrote a book about my life story, which came out in 2006. And once that book came out, it kind of created a whole life of its own. So people see this and think, oh, you're so strong, you're so brave, you're so courageous. But I meant to go to my grave with this series, with this secret. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there's no magic pill, there's no magic wand, there's nothing so special about me. I believe that I have this call, and I would say that is special, but anyone can heal. It is possible, and I used to believe that it was not possible to feel better, to do better, to live better, to love better, and I want most of all survivors who may be in the middle of a crisis right now, even though everything on the outside looks good, they may be living in the right neighborhood, driving the right car, but inside they are broken. I just want to encourage survivors right now to know that healing is possible.
Yes, for sure. Tell us about Black Woman Heal Day. It's coming up April 1st, and it's your second annual. I see that you have Ashley Molina that has come on board as your spokesperson this year.
Yes, so I guess it's been about 2 years now, two and a half years that I thought I want to do something that kind of brings women together. And I want to be clear, too, when I say Black Woman Heal, I mean Black in the most global way possible. I very specifically didn't name it African-American because my view for my mission and my work goes beyond the shores of the U.S., but certainly throughout the African diaspora, because the stories of sexual oppression that we endured as Black women who were slaves in the U.S. are the same stories of my sisters in the Dominican Republic, in Puerto Rico, in all the islands, Brazil. And so I look at this as a very global movement, even though the thrust right now is in the United States. We are reaching beyond our shores to engage our sisters. And I wanted to do something that brought honor to us. You know, we hear the strong Black woman all the time, and I wanted to carve out some space where we could take off the mask of being the strong Black woman, the angry Black woman, and just be the woman who needs love and support and healing. And to be able to find that within our own communities. That doesn't mean that a person can't be helped, you know, cross-racially by a therapist that's Black or Latino or whatever other than who you are. But what is very helpful is that when you are telling your story, you don't want to always have to translate your story into a way that the larger population, the white population in mode, can understand it. You want to be able to tell your story and people, girl, I understand. Just like when on How to Get Away with Murder, when the main character was telling of her own abuse and her mother was scratching her head, we understood that. Nobody had to interpret, what is she doing in her head? We understood that that is a way that Black women, especially elder Black women, have related to younger Black women for many years, for decades. And so you just want something within your cultural context to respond to your pain. And so I created this day to both honor us, but also encourage us to look for ways that we can create prevention and greater support for those in our families and in our communities that need healing.
What can women do right now who are listening or see the posts online? What can they do right now to do one or two or both things? Reach out to you because they would love to connect with you in the effort. Women who are have experienced this and they want your help.
That's a great question. So I will throw up my email, which is blackwomanheal@gmail.com. Again, blackwomanheal, that's easy to remember. And there's a couple things. One thing that we have this year that is new is that we have an ebook that is Healing Conversations, and it has seven conversations in it that women can download for free, and they can use that with a gathering with friends or family, or they can use it as a devotional and a journal guide for themselves. And so that's something that people can engage in. And I encourage people, especially this year, I'm really encouraging women to reach out to some young folks. If you have a daughter or a niece, get them together on Friday, April 1st for Black Woman Heal Day. Take them out for pizza or ice cream, or go out for coffee with your girlfriends or a wine bar, or even better yet, take them into your living room, an intimate, safe place where you can begin to talk about these issues. So we have seven discussion topics that you can engage in. or there might just be anything that you want to talk with them about. They can also engage in our social media. They can find me at Black Woman Heal on Twitter, and then they can find me at Black Woman Heal April 1st, Black Woman Heal Day April 1st on Facebook, or by my name, Lolita G, on Facebook, to get involved with some of our online efforts that we'll be having and sharing symbols for Black Woman Heal Day is the white flower in the hair, borrowing from Billie Holiday, who was a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And so we are asking women to take a selfie of the white flower in their hair and post it if you feel comfortable saying, I'm a survivor. Last year, so women for the very first time publicly shared their stories of survival. And the other thing that we have an initiative that's going on where I have a goal of getting responses from 1,000 black women globally on what is one word that they think of when they think of healing. So some women are just sharing words like courage, joy, strength, support, Jesus, you know. And so they can email that word to me at blackwomanheal@gmail.com. And some women are also sharing why that word is important to them. And once we get up to 1,000 responses, and that doesn't necessarily mean unique responses, we're kind of looking at what are black women thinking when they think about healing. We're looking at it from the body, the mind, and the spirit, and looking how we can take those words and use them back in a way that is healing.
Yes, for sure. Well, I am so glad to see how much you have accomplished in your own life as an overcomer, as a champion for this cause, and excited for the opportunities that this sets up for women to truly have a safe place to heal. It's a very commendable work, as I said earlier, and thank you so much for today and taking your time and being so transparent with your story. I know it's often hard for people, as you did clearly explain, to open up and get this out to the people that they think they can get help from. So I appreciate that you did that for us today. And I want everyone to know that Lolita also has a website where you can go and visit. It's www.lilada.org, www.lilada.org. Lolita, thank you once again. I hope your day is amazing, and I'm going to look forward to catching up with you as often as I need to so we can update people on, on what's going on. You have a great day.
Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you. And I want to thank all of you for listening in on a very challenging topic, and encourage you, if it's you with the issue, that you will seek out the help you need to get the strength and the confidence that you need to go forward in life. And anybody else that you know, please share this information with them as well. Also, tell them about Foxology Today. I do a show most every Monday, and it's at noon, and I'm hoping that you'll let your Facebook friends and your media, social media family know all about it. It's always something very positive, very powerful, and very productive, educational, and empowering. So I'm going to look forward. I'm going to look forward to talking to you again next week. It's Master Your Mindset Monday. It's always a great show. My radio BFF, Cassandra McShepherd, will join me for that conversation. In the meantime, I hope you have the most awesome day. Be good. Be blessed. Be awesome.